Chapter 2. On the walls, and do not hang off with cords. The designs themselves are often seen to better advantage in this latter position, but the general appearance of the chamber is injured. But one mirror, and this not a very large one, is visible. In shape it is nearly circular, and it is hung, so that a reflection of the person can be obtained from it in none of the ordinary sitting places of the room. Two large low sofas of rosewood and crimson silk, gold-flowered, form the only seats, with the exception of two light conversation chairs, also of rosewood. There is a pianoforte rosewood, also, without cover, and thrown open. An octagonal table, formed altogether of the richest gold-threaded marble, is placed near one of the sofas. This is also without cover. The drapery of the curtains has been thought sufficient. Four large and gorgeous Sevres vases, in which bloom a profusion of sweet and vivid flowers, occupy the slightly rounded angles of the room. A tall candelabrum, bearing a small antique lamp with highly perfumed oil, is standing near the head of my sleeping friend. Some light and graceful hanging shelves, with golden edges and crimson silk cords with gold tassels, sustain 200 or 300 magnificently bound books. Beyond these things, there is no furniture, if we except an argand lamp, with a plain crimson-tinted ground glass shade, which depends from the lofty vaulted ceiling by a single slender gold chain, and throws a tranquil, but magical radiance over all.
A Tale of Jerusalem, Intensos Rigidern Infronternus Andyrcanos, Passus Erit, Lucan de Catan, A Bristly Boar. Translation: Let us hurry to the walls, said Abel Fidum to Buzi ben Levi and Simeon the Pharisee, on the 10th day of the month Thammuz, in the year of the world 3914. Let us hasten to the ramparts adjoining the gate of Benjamin, which is in the city of David, and overlooking the camp of the uncircumcised. For it is the last hour of the fourth watch, being sunrise, and the idolaters, in fulfillment of the promise of Pompey, should be awaiting us with the lambs for the sacrifices. Simeon, Abel Fidum, and Buzi ben Levi were the gizbrum, or sub-collectors of the offering, in the holy city of Jerusalem. Verily, replied the Pharisee, let us hasten. For this generosity in the heathen is unwonted, and fickle-mindedness has ever been an attribute of the worshippers of Baal. That they are fickle-minded and treacherous is as true as the Pentateuch, said Buzi ben Levi, but that is only toward the people of Adonai. When was it ever known that the Ammonites proved wanting to their own interests? Methinks it is no great stretch of generosity to allow us lambs for the altar of the Lord, receiving in lieu thereof 30 silver shekels per head. Thou forgettest, however, Ben Levi, replied Abel Fidum, that the Roman Pompey, who is now impiously besieging the city of the Most High, has no authority that we apply not the lambs thus purchased for the altar to the sustenance of the body, rather than of the spirit. Now, by the five corners of my beard, shouted the Pharisee, who belonged to the sect called the Dashers, that little knot of saints whose manner of dashing and lacerating the feet against the pavement was long a thorn and a reproach to less zealous devotees, a stumbling block to less gifted perambulators, why the five corners of that beard which, as a priest, I am forbidden to shave? Have we lived to see the day when a blaspheming and idolatrous upstart of Rome shall accuse us of appropriating to the appetites of the flesh the most holy and consecrated elements? Have we lived to see the day when, let us not question the motives of the Philistine, interrupted Abel Fidum, or today we profit for the first time by his avarice or by his generosity? But rather let us hurry to the ramparts, lest offerings should be wanting for that altar whose fire the rains of heaven cannot extinguish, and whose pillars of smoke no tempest can turn aside. That part of the city to which our worthy Gizbrum now hastened, and which bore the name of its architect, King David, was esteemed the most strongly fortified district of Jerusalem, being situated upon the steep and lofty hill of Zion. Here, a broad, deep, circumvallatory trench, hewn from the solid rock, was defended by a wall of great strength erected upon its inner edge. This wall was adorned, at regular interspaces, by square towers of white marble, the lowest 60 and the highest 120 cubits in height. But, in the vicinity of the Gate of Benjamin, the wall arose by no means from the margin of the fosse. On the contrary, between the level of the ditch and the basement of the rampart, sprang up a perpendicular cliff of 250 cubits, forming part of the precipitous Mount Moriah. So that when Simeon and his associates arrived on the summit of the tower called Adonai Bezek, the loftiest of all the turrets around about Jerusalem, and the usual place of conference with the besieging army, they looked down upon the camp of the enemy from an eminence excelling by many feet that of the Pyramid of Cheops, and, by several, that of the Temple of Belus. Verily, sighed the Pharisee, as he peered dizzily over the precipice, the uncircumcised are as the sands by the seashore, as the locusts in the wilderness. The valley of the king hath become the valley of Adaman. And yet, added Ben Levi, thou canst not point me out a Philistine, no, not one from Aleph to Tah, from the wilderness to the battlements, who seemeth any bigger than the letter Jod. Lower away the basket with the shekels of silver. Here, shouted a Roman soldier in a hoarse, rough voice, which appeared to issue from the regions of Pluto, o'er away the basket with the accursed coin which it has broken the jaw of a noble Roman to pronounce. Is it thus you evince your gratitude to our master Pompeius, who, in his condescension, has thought fit to listen to your idolatrous importunities? The god Phobos, who is a true god, has been charioted for an hour, and were you not to be on the ramparts by sunrise? Oedipal, do you think that we, the conquerors of the world, have nothing better to do than stand waiting by the walls of every kennel, to traffic with the dogs of the earth? Lower away, I say, and see, that your trumpery be bright in color, and just in weight. Elohim, ejaculated the Pharisee, as the discordant tones of the centurion rattled up the cracks of the precipice, and fainted away against the temple. Elohim, who is the god Phobos? Whom doth the blasphemer invoke? Thou, Buzi ben Levi, who art read in the laws of the Gentiles, and hast sojourned among them who dabble with the teraphim, is it Nergal of whom the idolater speaketh, or Ashima, or Nibhaz, or Tartak? Or Adramelech, or Anamelech, or Succoth Beneth, or Dagon, or Belial, or Baal Pereth, or Baal Peor, or Baal Zebub. Verily it is neither, but beware how thou lettest the rope slip too rapidly through thy fingers, for should the wicker work chance to hang on the projection of yonder crag, there will be a woeful outpouring of the holy things of the sanctuary. By the assistance of some rudely constructed machinery, the heavily laden basket was now carefully lowered down among the multitude, and, from the giddy pinnacle, the Romans were seen gathering confusedly round it, but owing to the vast height, and the prevalence of a fog, no distinct view of their operations could be obtained. Half an hour had already elapsed. We shall be too late, sighed the Pharisee, as at the expiration of this period he looked over into the abyss. He shall be too late, we shall be turned out of office by the Catholim. O more, responded Abel Fidum, O more shall we feast upon the fat of the land, no longer shall our beards be odorous with frankincense, our loins girded up with fine linen from the temple. Rachel swore Ben Levi, Rachel, do they mean to defraud us of the purchase money, or, holy Moses, are they weighing the shekels of the tabernacle? They have given the signal at last, cried the Pharisee, they have given the signal at last. Pull away, Abel Fidum, and thou, Buzi ben Levi, pull away, for verily the Philistines have either still hold upon the basket, or the Lord hath softened their hearts, to place there a beast of good weight. And the Gizram pulled away, while their burden swung heavily upward through the still increasing mist. Bushohi, as, at the conclusion of an hour, some object at the extremity of the rope, became indistinctly visible. Ushohi was the exclamation which burst from the lips of Ben Levi. Dot 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 dot. Ushohi. For shame. It is a ram from the thickets of Engedi, and as rugged as the valley of Jehoshaphat. It is a firstling of the flock, said Abel Fidom. I know him by the bleeding of his lips, and the innocent folding of his limbs. His eyes are more beautiful than the jewels of the pectoral, and his flesh is like the honey of Hebron. It is a fatted calf from the pastures of Bashan, said the Pharisee. The heathen have dealt wonderfully with us. Let us raise up our voices in a psalm. Let us give thanks on the sham, and on the psaltery, on the harp, and on the hagab, on the cithern, and on the sackbut. It was not until the basket had arrived within a few feet of the gizbrum that a low grunt betrayed to their perception a hog of no common size. Now Elamanu. Slowly and with upturned eyes ejaculated the trio, as, letting go their hold, the emancipated porker tumbled headlong among the Philistines. Elamanu. God be with us, it is the unutterable flesh. Tilde 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 end of text tilde 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 equals 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 equals. The Sphinx. During the dread reign of the cholera in New York, I had accepted the invitation of a relative to spend a fortnight with him in the retirement of his cottage or knee on the banks of the Hudson. We had here around us all the ordinary means of summer amusement, and what with rambling in the woods, sketching, boating, fishing, bathing, music, and books, we should have passed the time pleasantly enough, but for the fearful intelligence which reached us every morning from the populous city. Not a day lapsed which did not bring us news of the decease of some acquaintance. Then as the fatality increased, we learned to expect daily the loss of some friend. At length we trembled at the approach of every messenger. The very air from the south seemed to us redolent with death. That palsying thought, indeed, took entire possession of my soul. I could neither speak, think, nor dream of anything else. My host was of a less excitable temperament, and, although greatly depressed in spirits, exerted himself to sustain my own. His richly philosophical intellect was not at any time affected by unrealities. To the substances of terror he was sufficiently alive, but of its shadows he had no apprehension. His endeavors to arouse me from the condition of abnormal gloom into which I had fallen were frustrated, in great measure, by certain volumes which I had found in his library. These were of a character to force into germination whatever seeds of hereditary superstition lay latent in my bosom. I had been reading these books without his knowledge, and thus he was often at a loss to account for the forcible impressions which had been made upon my fancy. A favorite topic with me was the popular belief in omens, a belief which, at this one epoch of my life, I was almost seriously disposed to defend. On this subject we had long and animated discussions, he maintaining the utter groundlessness of faith in such matters, I contending that a popular sentiment arising with absolute spontaneity, that is to say, without apparent traces of suggestion, had in itself the unmistakable elements of truth, and was entitled to as much respect as that intuition which is the idiosyncrasy of the individual man of genius. The fact is, that soon after my arrival at the cottage there had occurred to myself an incident so entirely inexplicable, and which had in it so much of the portentous character, that I might well have been excused for regarding it as an omen. It appalled, and at the same time so confounded and bewildered me, that many days elapsed before I could make up my mind to communicate the circumstances to my friend. Near the close of exceedingly warm day, I was sitting, book in hand, at an open window, commanding, through a long vista of the river banks, a view of a distant hill, the face of which nearest my position had been denuded by what is termed a landslide, of the principal portion of its trees. My thoughts had been long wandering from the volume before me to the gloom and desolation of the neighboring city. Uplifting my eyes from the page, they fell upon the naked face of the bill, and upon an object, upon some living monster of hideous conformation, which very rapidly made its way from the summit to the bottom, disappearing finally in the dense forest below. As this creature first came in sight, I doubted my own sanity, or at least the evidence of my own eyes. And many minutes passed before I succeeded in convincing myself that I was neither mad nor in a dream. Yet when I described the monster which I distinctly saw, and calmly surveyed through the whole period of its progress, my readers, I fear, will feel more difficulty in being convinced of these points than even I did myself. Estimating the size of the creature by comparison with the diameter of the large trees near which it passed the few giants of the forest which had escaped the fury of the landslide, I concluded it to be far larger than any ship of the line in existence. I say ship of the line, because the shape of the monster suggested the idea the hull of one of our 74 might convey a very tolerable conception of the general outline. The mouth of the animal was situated at the extremity of a proboscis some 60 or 70 feet in length, and about as thick as the body of an ordinary elephant. Near the root of this trunk was an immense quantity of black shaggy hair, more than could have been supplied by the coats of a score of buffaloes. And projecting from this hair downwardly and laterally, sprang two gleaming tusks not unlike those of the wild boar, but of infinitely greater dimensions. Extending forward, parallel with the proboscis, and on each side of it, was a gigantic staff, 30 or 40 feet in length, formed seemingly of pure crystal and in shape a perfect prism. It reflected in the most gorgeous manner the rays of the declining sun. The trunk was fashioned like a wedge with the apex to the earth. From it there were outspread two pairs of wings, each wing nearly 100 yards in length, one pair being placed above the other, and all thickly covered with metal scales, each scale apparently some 10 or 12 feet in diameter. I observed that the upper and lower tiers of wings were connected by a strong chain. But the chief peculiarity of this horrible thing was the representation of a death's head, which covered nearly the whole surface of its breast, and which was as accurately traced in glaring white upon the dark ground of the body as if it had been there carefully designed by an artist. While I regarded the terrific animal, and more especially the appearance on its breast, with a feeling of horror and awe, with a sentiment of forthcoming evil, which I found it impossible to quell by any effort of the reason, I perceived the huge jaws at the extremity of the proboscis suddenly expand themselves, and from them there proceeded a sound so loud, and so expressive of woe, that it struck upon my nerves like a knell, and as the monster disappeared at the foot of the hill, I fell at once, fainting, to the floor. Upon recovering, my first impulse, of course, was to inform my friend of what I had seen and heard, and I can scarcely explain what feeling of repugnance it was which, in the end, operated to prevent me. At length, one evening, some 3 or 4 days after the occurrence, we were sitting together in the room in which I had seen the apparition, I occupying the same seat at the same window, and he lounging on a sofa near at hand. The association of the place and time impelled me to give him an account of the phenomenon. He heard me to the end, at first laughed heartily, and then lapsed into an excessively grave demeanor, as if my insanity was a thing beyond suspicion. At this instant I again had a distinct view of the monster, to which, with a shout of absolute terror, I now directed his attention. He looked eagerly, but maintained that he saw nothing, although I designated minutely the course of the creature, as it made its way down the naked face of the hill. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.